Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. We opened the song with Hallway by Judah the Lion. We had to play that song today because it is his birthday. So if you see Judah the Lion, tell him I say happy birthday. Now, Judah's not the only one a birthday today. I know that there are many, many more. I just don't have all of your names, but one name I do have is Mr. Adrian Ramsey. Adrian Ramsey, I hope you are having a wonderful, wonderful birthday today. And most of all, I hope you fill it with talking politics, because I know you love to do that. And everybody gets to do what they love on their birthday. So happy birthday to everybody out there. Good morning, Mr. Mark Palmer, on this World News Tuesday. How are you doing?
Good morning, Aaron. I'm very well.
Good, good.
You're looking well, too. You're looking very refreshed.
Yes.
From your cold shower this morning.
Yes, 3-10 gang strikes again. I don't know. If the Ministry of National Security wasn't so busy, I'd call up an emergency meeting with them right away. But I just want to say to my older Bahamians, listen, just be easy. Don't run hot at everything. You got to be selective, which you are not on. I call it selective memory. I also encourage people to adopt selective misery. You could only be miserable about a limited amount of things in a day. So just select a couple of things to be miserable about, and that will make your day run a lot smoother. On the same note, I want you all to not forget that the 3-10 gang are on the road with us, you know. And so what that means is that I'm going to need you to stop driving with your cell phone in your face like it's a movie. Because the 3-10 gang on the road trying to cut a movie, then they need your attention. See, these are the reasons why you don't drive with your cell phone in your hand. Not because you are a horrible driver. I mean, not on record. I can't say that on record. I believe it. But it's not because you are a horrible driver, but it's because there are other people around you that may not be driving as well as you are. And your attention is required. A, because that's what the law, like that's what it says. Like you, 100% attention on the road when you're driving. But also because other people may make mistakes. And the way to avoid accidents sometimes is good defensive driving.
But you also need that for the potholes. You know, after that rain, there are some serious potholes on Shirley Street, you know, in that corner with Village Road. Oh, my God, there's like three long. There's one must be 2 foot deep.
No. Those are trenches. Wait.
Yeah.
Because I could see how you got confused. Because of a lack, like an absence of signage to indicate to you that this is an open construction zone. Now,
because maybe we could say, look, don't look at your phone because you can mash up your car.
Yeah.
Maybe that might make people think more, because boy, I tell you, my wheel had gone in one of them.
Yeah, on the in the left Plenty lane more. In the eastbound going eastbound. Westbound, yeah. Right on the Shirley Street side, southern lane, right, the left lane.
I remember. Do you remember about 8 years ago? I can't remember which administration. I think it was a previous administration. They had a really tough time fixing the roads. I remember Duran Thompson had his one was so big. He had his daughter lie in it. And only after that went in the front page, right? They fixed it literally within a couple of days. Boom. So that's what he had to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't call it a complaint. We call it constructive criticism. That's what we call it. I had an incident there this weekend where a driver was totally unaware of the trenches in the road, right? And so initially they just popped out of one of the cutouts at Dick's Point, driving at 2 miles an hour. For this, I am grateful. I'm grateful, actually. People think, oh, I ran hard. No, she made me aware right then that she's a problematic, reckless driver, and I should have 1,000% of my attention on her. So we crawl up the road at about 2 miles an hour, and then we got to the Shirley Village Road intersection. I'm in the north lane. I mean, the driver's in the left lane. But by the time we made it to the light, right? So from you turn off of Shirley into the little cut. By the time we made it to the light, that woman was in my lane with me.
She knew something you didn't.
Like she have science. She have magic, like Star Trek magic. And I just want to say, Ministry of Education, Technical Vocational Training, y'all go find her, because she teleported from her lane to my lane, right? Instantly. And I was just stunned. The person in the car with me asked me why I didn't blow my horn, why I didn't do anything. And I told him, to be honest with you, I had to focus on not dying. And so it turns out that she didn't know the trenches were in the road either, even though she's driving at 2 miles an hour approaching him. This is to say a couple of things. Whoever's responsible for the Village Road works, even though your original completion date was September, did y'all notice that y'all are not complete? Why did y'all take all the signage away? Why is there no signage? Why is there no signage at East Bay and Eastern Road, Montague intersection, right? Why is there no signage going westbound on Shirley Street up to the gas station to indicate to people that that these are roadworks and not your regular pothole? See, I knew that you weren't going to be completed with this project by September. I knew you weren't going to be completed with the project by November. And to be honest with you, if you are completed with the project by Valentine's Day, I may actually vote for one of these political parties. But we know that you're not going to. So what happened to the signage? See, let's link this to the conversation about whether a roundabout or lights will be more effective traffic management by BNT and QC. It doesn't matter if y'all don't educate the people about what you expect to occur after the road change, if you don't ensure that there's proper signage and lighting up all the time, if you don't have officers present to manage traffic, then you're going to have the same results as if you just let a bunch of monkeys run the traffic department. It's not a proper roadwork project. I don't care how professional you think you are. Where is the signage? Where are the big billboards with the estimation of the completion date? Where's the massive signage indicating to people clearly where the detours are located? Where are the... Anyway, that's government.
I've got some good news.
I mean, there's good news, too.
I had to tax my car, true Bahamian style. I leave it to the 30th of September, but I did. My wife cleverly booked me into Fort Charlotte. Right?
Yeah.
It was an incredible experience. Professional, no hassle. So I have to give thumbs up to that experience. So yeah. Not everything is, you know, not everything needs to be improved to that dramatic
Listen,
extent.
I love that yeah. because that's a great silver lining mm-hmm. to what appears to be a dark cloud in the same situation.
And, you know, it's technology driven. You know, now it's all, you don't pay cash, it's all card.
Hold on, is it the technology that relies on electricity?
Yes, but...
And telecommunication services?
But isn't it cool? You go online to do an appointment and you arrive and it's there. It's actually yeah. recorded. And,
that's
and so. These are good things, you know, and so we are making progress.
We are
sure.
we are making progress. On yeah. the flip side, though, mm-hmm. there was an incident where I think a poorly written press release was published. It suggested that to be able to get your driver's license renewed, you needed to own a car.
Oh, okay.
The government quickly retracted the statement and clarified that actually what's happening is that they are only offering services. So it means that you can't access any services unless you are in a vehicle. This is also very problematic. See, when we look at the digital situation, we think, okay, look here, this is progress. And it is, to some extent, mm-hmm. progress. But progress for how many? What percentage of people can hang on to this train that is driving into the future? Mm-hmm. How many people are now disadvantaged because they don't have the type of accessibility or connectivity mm-hmm. that a percentage of the country has? Mm-hmm. And so it's great that we're moving in that direction, but where are the steps to ensure that everybody can access that same service? Because here you are now, does it mean that, you know, if I don't have a car, I can't get my driver's license renewed? If I don't have access to a car, I can't get my driver's license renewed? It does not matter that whether I have a car or not. First of all, a driver's license is a government-accepted a national accepted form mm-hmm. of ID, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we use it for. Second of all, I could have my driver's license just to drive in another jurisdiction, to apply to drive in that jurisdiction.
So right. there is actually, the exception is if you go to Fort Charlotte, mm-hmm. you don't have to be in your car to do any of those things.
But that's cashless.
Right. Okay. That's the next issue. Yeah.
Right. And so, okay. All of these things are progress, but we have to ensure that mm-hmm. when we're progressing, that we're capturing everybody, right? And this is not the private sector where you could say, well, listen, we've worked the numbers and this is the lowest loss, right? This is the lowest lack of accessibility. We got 2% of people can't connect. This is the government. The government's job is to work on it until they provide accessibility for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
But thank you for that positive vibe, because we got to remember to see the good things that yep. are happening, you know? Absolutely, Mark. Absolutely. A producer, are my guests in the Zoom room? Okay, we're just waiting on guests to arrive in the Zoom. I see you got a call on the line. Let's go to that caller. Good morning, caller. You on the clock.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. How you do?
I'm giving thanks. I want to address what's in the news this morning, right?
Okay, hold on. Yeah. What in particular? Because
yeah.
my topic for today
about the immigration thing, right? See, both of my I'm a first generation Bahamian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both of my parents are from the Turks and Caicos, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got a brother been living in the UK for about 30 years. I got a brother been living in New York for about 30 years. I got a sister been living in Texas for about the same. I got a sister living in Texas now. Most of my nieces and nephews, they're in foreign, right?
Right.
And, you know, and then when I look at the situation in the Bahamas, right, they're immigrants. They're immigrants here, right?
Yeah.
You know, I believe in universal human rights.
Okay.
But it seems like here in the Bahamas, we only concerned about the human rights immigrants, but not of the poor black people.
Okay, pause right there.
I mean,
no, I say pause. Hold on.
Hang up and then let you know what I'm saying?
Okay, then. Cool.
Yeah, and see.
No, what I'm saying is, but
you know,
hold on, I won't respond now. If you don't want to let me respond now, then you hang up now, and then I could respond.
Exactly, the dialogue. Go ahead, respond.
You're saying that we focus too much on migrants' human rights and not on poor people's human rights?
No, I'm not saying that we focus too much on the migrant. I'm saying we focus on the migrant, but not on the poor being in human rights.
I'm going to share something with you. We don't focus on human rights at all in this country, not in the sense that you think. We don't even believe in human rights. And so I'm saying that to get to the root of the problem, to devise the proper solution, we have to realize that Bahamians' perception of what human rights are and how they operate are far different from the actual human rights framework. And so before we focus too much on migrants and not on poor people, you got to understand what people think human rights are. People think human rights are the rights that God gave you. And that's it, right? That's the general perception, Bahamians, of human rights.
Human rights, go on to the UN, right? There's human rights, which is different from civil rights.
No, you're missing the point. Mm-hmm. But the second point is this ain't what I plan on talking about today, cuz.
Right.
You know? And I appreciate you wanting to talk about it. It's not what I planned on talking about today. I'm just waiting for my guests in the Zoom room because This is Caribbean Tree Planting Week. And I want to talk about planting trees. I want to talk about the importance of trees and the dangers of deforestation. And I also think that this is an important conversation in the midst of this weather, in the hurricane season and the weather that we've been experiencing. See, we don't have hills. We don't have a lot of hills. We used to have hills. These guys just keep cutting down the hills as if they don't read a science book. But we don't have hills like Jamaica has hills. We don't have mountains. We don't have loamy soil. And so we don't typically experience mudslides, right, like Haiti. We don't experience those things. But with this tremendous amount of rain and flooding, we got a serious risk, a potential of a dangerous situation where we're going to quickly lose the little bit of topsoil that we have in the country. And understanding the importance of topsoil to the function of the planet, right? It is integral. It is primary. It's about processing water. It's about, being able to plant trees. It's about being able to sustain flora and fauna. So it's really important. One of the things I noticed with all of this rain and derelict public infrastructure, right, is not only do we have no water catchment systems, no large-scale water catchment systems. We don't have any large-scale soil retention systems or programs either. And so, like the flooding that we experienced, tremendous rain over a series of days, you realize how quickly it is your sort of environmental and agricultural environment could shift, right? Mm-hmm. Or ecological environment could shift overnight or over the course of a week. And so I really wanted to have this conversation in the midst of Caribbean tree planting. Our producer, guests in the Zoom room? Guests are not in the Zoom room yet. Okay, let's take this caller, and then at some point we'll go to a break and I'll give them a call. Because there's lots in the news as well, Mr. Palmer. North Korea fired a missile. They had a missile test yesterday or day before yesterday, and the world has been in an uproar ever since. Let's go to this caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yes, I didn't really want to talk about immigration.
But you started by talking. Cousin, look here, don't be mad at me. Okay, don't be mad at me, caller. But you started off by talking about immigration. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share because it may be something that I had never thought about. It may be something of note to the wider audience and not just me. And we have to give space for that as well. Here's a text. Ms. Green, have you noticed that the Bahamas is gradually becoming a dictatorship? What I have noticed is that bully culture is taken from the top down. We parent like bullies. We teach like bullies. We oversee our communities like bullies. We drive like bullies. We govern like bullies. We relate to each other in our relationships. We act like bullies. So I don't know if it's that it's a dictatorship style of government that's taken root. I think it's something, about that behavior.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is we live in a hierarchical structure.
Yeah.
And it just becomes more and more obvious in every field, you know, and you tend to, you have that apex, okay, in government, it's the cabinet, then the House of Assembly underneath with sort of the Senate on the side of it. And they decide, really, mm-hmm. what happens. Do they listen to us? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
They listen to special interests. We know that. We have a lot of data on that. And everything is hierarchical. And usually you have at the top, you have a committee or some unelected body with those rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be seen like a dictatorship in that sense, because they are making rules that govern our health and various other things. And we never elected them.
Yeah.
They've been appointed by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all top down.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have that feeling, you know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If dictatorship really is, can you push against something? You know, can we push against the government? I think it's very hard.
Yeah.
If they don't have our interests at heart, I'm not saying that they don't, but
yeah.
if they don't, it makes it very difficult to
yeah.
survive. It's all hierarchical. We live, like I say, we do live on this plantation.
Yeah.
And when it's benign, that's fine. But is it benign? That's what you have to. Has it been corrupted? By
mm-hmm.
special interests.
Yeah.
And we know corruption does exist, even
yeah.
though some people say it doesn't.
Who are these people?
Well,
but, you know, like in the same way, corruption
yeah.
must exist. Like, look at the world. Look at the Bahamas. Look at this. What's happening around you, right? Our practices are corrupt, right? Like, when you roll through a stop sign, that's mm-hmm. corruption, right? That's corrupt. Call it crooked, right? It's crooked. You know what you're doing. And so the place must be, there has to be. And I wonder where people, how people feel like they could just get up and say that and other people are going to believe that, you know.
What do you think about, I mean, I saw this very interesting podcast with a woman, she's called Magati, I forget, she's from Senegal. She's
yeah.
an entrepreneur and she talks a lot about corruption in her country, and her theory was that it's to do with laws. That when you have unjust laws that unfairly penalize people, that results in corruption. Or if you find it very hard to do something that could be quite easy to do, then that encourages
mm-hmm.
fast-track
yeah.
corruption. So it's ultimately, you have to look at the, she's saying you have to look at the processes.
Oh, yeah,
and the laws.
Yeah.
Because that the corruption is a symptom of that. You know,
Well, this is it, right? Like, the system is
of a structure.
Right. Or the yeah. structure is corrupt. The structure is either it's not working the way it was designed to work, or the way that it was designed is not balanced, it's not sound, it's problematic, it intends to do some right. And so, of course, it's going to breed corruption.
So if it takes you, say, for example, a year to get something done that could take 2 weeks everywhere else, you're going to breed
yeah.
Environment where people are going to say, I can speed this up for you a couple $100s or whatever.
Yeah.
And so,
or where people are willing to pay because they're so frustrated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's not put the sort of malfeasance on the worker, right? Or on the service person requesting the service.
Yeah.
You're so frustrated that you're willing to do anything just to get this legit thing done, right? Like, I'm not asking you to be crooked, to do something out of the way. I'm just asking you to do what you're supposed to do
right
now.
Right.
And so that is obviously not the result of crooked people, but of a crooked system or a corrupt system. Anyway, Mark, that's the music. When we go to this break, I'm going to check in with my guest because this Caribbean Tree Planting Week and virtual conference is one of the most exciting things happening in the latter half of the year. I really wanted to talk about it. So thank you, Mark, for sort of walking along with me this morning. And to the texters, we'll be right back. You're On the Clock with Erin Green.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options. We're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has always, you're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green, and I've got a message here for you from BTC. BTC bundle customers, you just got a free speed bump. That's right. The fastest and most reliable fiber internet in the Bahamas is now up to three times faster for free. Here's how we're bumping up your current speeds. If you have the Extreme 100 Plus Talk 24/7 100 megabits per second to 300 megabits per second. If you have the Extreme 100 Plus TV Max bundle, you're going from 100 Mbps to 300 Mbps. And if you have the Extreme 150 Plus Talk 24/7 Plus TV Max bundle, you're jumping from 150 Mbps to 300 Mbps. Nothing to do? Just keep doing you. That message is brought to you from BTC. Welcome back. Welcome back to this World News Tuesday with Mr. Mark Palmer. Just checking with my producer. I'm expecting my guest. She's there? No, not yet. I'm expecting. Oh, awesome, awesome. Good morning, Miss Melissa Ingram. How are you? Hello? She'll be there shortly. So, Caribbean Tree Planting Week 2022, the theme this year is Partnerships for Climate Action, Mitigation, and Adaption to Achieve the Sustainable Development Goals 13, 15, and 17. And the Caribbean Tree Planting Week is October 3rd through October 9th. Good morning, Ms. Melissa Ingram. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm well. How are you?
I am good. Good. Thank you. So you don't mind me, we'd already started the discussion. I told people I had you on a super, super important mission, scoping out mango trees. Because a farmer told me that we could, there's so many varieties of mango trees, we could have a mango every month of the year if we identified and planted the right trees.
That is correct.
This is awesome. Please introduce yourself to the people and tell us a bit about Caribbean Tree Planting Week.
Awesome. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me today. My name is Melissa Ingram. I was the former national leader of the Bahamas 100,000 Tree Planting Initiative, which was between January 2020 and June of 2021. We have recently passed on the role to a young student, grade 11 at St. Anne's, named Aaliyah Roll. She does have her own organization, Plant a Tree with Key, and we will be working with her throughout the week and the rest of this term to develop a plan that she's going to launch come January of 2023. But stay tuned. I'll give you some social media information and such about that. But I was a former project manager as well, so it did coincide with the volunteer work under the Caribbean Tree Planting Project. The Bahamas was one of 22 countries that participated. We did accomplish a goal of seeing 126,000 trees planted in country. That would have been with efforts based on our project team growing plans. We grew about 4,000 platform for persons to contribute their numbers that they might have planted on a farm or just in their yard or any plantings that they might have done, as well as coordinating with different national scale projects like mangrove planting activities in Abaco and Grand Bahama, for instance, that also contributed their numbers.
Okay, so where can I get a form for this year's tree planting exercise? Because myself and my co-host this morning, Mr. Mark Palmer, we've been about planting trees this year.
Yes, that's what I like to hear.
Yes, ma'am. With the support of Dr. Ancelino Davis, who's really, he really encouraged me to step up my planting by donating some trees and even trading trees with me, right? Which makes it even more exciting.
Nice. That sounds like Dr. Davis. He's awesome. He's been one of our primary advisors on the tree planting team since we started. But we have yet to launch the tree planting forum, the public forum. That will be something that will be announced as we launch the official project come January 2023, like I say.
Okay.
But let's say when you could plant, if you did say since January of 2022, all can be included in it. So just make sure to look out for the form, and that will be coming sooner than later.
All right. Now, are you participating in this year's Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance conference?
So I actually am away in Ireland. I'm doing my master's in climate change. So I just got over here, and I'm settling in and such. So I'm still in a support role. But I'm not too active in participation this year. I am in more of an advisory standpoint for the local Bahamas team project.
All right. Let me, if you don't mind, if I could read off just some of the discussions that are taking place and presentations. The conference is started yesterday. It runs until the 9th of October, and you can go to Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance 2022, and all the information will be available on that website. But they got discussions. There's a conversation in music, and cultural interludes include modern forms of artistic expression to facilitate regional South action and tree planting. They've got grassroots replicable strategies for women, and the presenters are from Haiti, the U.S., Tanzania, Nigeria, and the Dominican Republic. Commitments to tree planting, government policies and actions to facilitate climate action, a regional Caribbean tree planting week, commitments to achieving national targets, like a number of regional and international panels and discussion. And this is just half of the schedule that I was able to find. The Trees That Feed Foundation founder will be there. There will be agricultural economists. Indigenous culture to mobilize social action and tree planting. It's just going to be fantastic.
I mean, does it matter, Melissa, what type of tree you plant? Because, you know, when the pandemic started, you know, we all realized that we only have like a month's worth of food supply on the island. So I started growing the sort of root planted quite a few trees, and now I have no more space in my garden. And but it was all I focused on fruit trees. And when you look at new developments, all I see is palm trees. You know, not even coconut palm trees, but sort of ornamental palm trees. Because when I live in an old neighborhood and everyone's got mature fruit trees in their garden, we kind of lost that whole thing. How do you encourage, you know, the people in these new developments who just have ornamental trees to go into planting something, you know, that the birds can eat, that they can eat, that the other animals can eat? How do you do that? And, you know, does it matter which tree? Does it matter if you have ornamental palm? Would that be considered a tree, or is it something else that you're recommending?
Yeah, so no, that's a very valid point that you brought up and a great question nonetheless. So the tree planting initiative, when we first developed the project, actually exactly what you just mentioned was the basis of why we chose the tree types that we picked. A lot of developments, once they come in country, you know, they clear cut what we know as bush, and then they just replant with horticultural plants for the beautifying aspect. but the local native diversity that comes with all of the plants that are naturally found here, which have their own, you know, benefits to being in the Bahamas, besides their beauty, besides being wildlife and food, habitats for different animals and providing shade and all of the various, you know, benefits that they do bring. Mm-hmm. Planting fruit trees, for one, will, you know, provide food security or ensure a bit more food security for the citizens of the country. Planting native trees will, like I said, just ensure that the preservation of natural and native plants, both native and endemic plants, are met, as well as planting like dune plants, ensuring that our shorelines are protected, planting mangroves to ensure that we have some kind of defense against storms and such. At least once you have the removal of these plant species that you mitigate by replanting them times three. And that's actually according to the Forestry Act, I think, of 2019, a recent legislation out where the mitigation needs to replace and replenish the amount of native trees that were cut down and removed.
All right. A couple of things. This is fascinating. So let's start at the end. Is there you're saying there's a 2019 amendment to the Forestry Act? Because the last one I saw was the 2014, and possibly it's that, right? The 2014 Forestry Act amendment?
Yeah, no, so there's a more recent one.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
2019, okay. But the act would speak to the protected trees list that would have come out. There's a final protected list that was recently released in the past few years.
Yeah, I have it right here. The 2021, it would have been under the Minister of Environment and Housing, Ferreira.
That should also speak to the clear-cutting aspect that I mentioned. That is now illegal. You do need to go through the forestry unit to have permits before you clear-cut or remove any plant species on your property before a development or a housing kind of development, like, you know, on a smaller scale. If you have a protected tree on your property, there are certain, I guess, guidelines that the forestry unit would kind of perpetuate you to follow so that, you know, our trees are protected. And if you do need to cut it down, well, you do need like a special like yes or no answer from them.
Right.
As the amount of trees you need to replace that area that you have cut those trees down from and what types of trees, specifically native trees, you should replace them with.
Okay. But
is it being, this is news to me. I mean, I saw two lots that were cleared recently, not one tree left on them. In fact, one in Buen Retiro, they cut down all the big trees and chopped them up and left them on the side of the road. And I don't know if they were protected or not, but they were mature trees. So I'm just wondering whether, sounds good, but are people actually aware of it?
Right. And if that specific policy is for protected trees or... Are you saying that before you can clear a lot, an officer must come in and determine whether there are protected trees on the lot?
So, like I said, it depends on the scale of the
development. I got you.
There are certain assessments through the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection, like environmental impact assessments, environmental baseline studies, certain things like that, that I know on a larger scale. They do have maybe different contracted consultancy agencies go in and do assessments. And once the plant list comes back, then there's the revision of, okay, are any protected trees on this? And how would we distribute this information from an environmental standpoint to the forestry unit, to the Department of Marine Resources, different, you know, local agencies relative to what's been found in these documents? From a home level, there is a clearance, a CEC, that is necessary. That's also through the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection. And with that document, I believe there is a level of botanical studies that's required. And if there are protected trees identified, there is some guidance from the forestry unit that's necessary. It is case by case. So, you know, it really depends on what the development is, the factors involved as to what the actual response would be.
Yeah. So if you look at the Forestry Regulations Act 2014, which is sort of the amendment to the 2010 Forestry Act, Article 4, it indicates the size determination, the size of the property and what's required. So there's the 1997 Conservation and Protection of the Physical Landscape of the Bahamas Regulations. Then there is the Forestry Act 2010. then the Forestry Regulations, which is like an Amendment Act 2014. And then there is the Forestry Act Amendment 2020 with the Declaration of Protected Trees, right? Order 2021. I got two callers on the line, and then when we get back from the callers, what I wanted to say to you is pigeon forests or food forests. Which one should I prioritize? Because the pigeons is eat what I eat. I can't eat what they eat. Anyway, let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Mr. Green. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good. Thank you, Sparky. How you do?
Okay. You know, when I was younger, I remember around Christmas time, we used to go down Carmichael Road and stuff like that with our parents and cut those what we used to call them Christmas trees, those pine trees,
mm-hmm.
to use them. But they don't have the long thistles and use the voice balloons. We used to use them for our Christmas trees before we started importing those trees from Canada and so forth.
Yes.
But you had to get a permit to go down there and cut down a tree.
You still do.
But if you drive down Carmichael Road now going towards Adelaide, if you look right behind the first line of bush right next to the road, you'll see massive acres of doggone pine trees are missing.
I got you, Sparky.
But what I'm saying also in regards to this tree planting thing, you remember I told you that I was in charge of the park in Pride Estate?
Yes, sir.
Since then, what I've been doing is every month when I get my little piece of change, what I didn't plant from the seed inside my yard and got them caught, I would go out and purchase two trees from maybe Rocky Farm.
So, Sparky, I got another caller. You want me to make sure that you get a form so you could list the trees that you've planted for Caribbean Tree Planting Week? I could do that. Caller, you're on the clock. Good morning, caller. Sorry I missed your call second. Caller, Melissa, Sparky is a part of this program. He has been placed or volunteered to take care of the Pride Estates trees on his own sort of personal community campaign. And so I know he's always excited to share in these conversations. So back to my question. I agree, definitely plant mangroves, right? Like we have to plant indigenous trees or trees that are vital for environmental integrity. But food forest versus pigeon forest. See, because I have a royal crown pigeon, imperial pigeon. I have tobacco dove. That's what they call them. I got all kind of pigeon. I got small ground bird. I got birds that is challenged, chickchanies and raccoons in the bush. What should I be growing?
Property you're trying to plant within. You can do either one, but a lot of these plants do live in harmony. You can have a forest that has both edible fruits to you and edible fruits to the pigeons and the wild animals. Something like pigeon plum, which is a native Bahamian tree, you can eat the berries of that. It's very similar to sea grape. They're in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you may not like it as much, but you know, it's edible. There are different things that you can eat, like for instance, camalame, the bark we use for medicinal values.
Menstrual as well cramps, as migraines, among other things, yeah?
Yeah, so like I said, it depends on the scale of the size of the area that you're planting. If you're on like a community park, if you want to strictly enforce the notion of fruit forests and just food security and maybe providing provisions for local community members to have additional food as fruit sources, a fruit forest would be, you know, good. If you have some room that we have enough space that we could do both, and you know, we could also really support the native wildlife, we can just add as many trees as possible so that we have shade and just for mental health stimulation and on all of the, you know, different benefits associated with tree planting and trees as they grow older for the next generations.
All right. Okay, so I've got a list of protected trees here from the 2020-2021 schedule, right? And a lot of them don't have a name or no known common name. Is there a place where I could go to learn more about the local trees and the local indigenous bushes and things and protected trees?
Boy, that's a tough question for me. I would say that the names that you see there are the names that have been identified. So the common names that you might know, like for instance, Kamalami has a ton of different common names.
Hold on, is Kamalami protected though? Is Kamalami not on the protected list, right?
No, it should be.
Kamalami, the same Kamalami in Mayotte? Okay, no, okay, good.
Like I say, we have plenty of different common names.
Yeah.
And the purpose of a scientific name, because I could be talking to you about Kamalami and you might be talking about poison wood, and we talking about two different plants. But then when you look at the scientific name, then you confirm this is the plant that we're talking about, and we have a common ground. So there's always a scientific name to identify every plant that you have seen. But in a local, like a cultural setting, we might have our own like terminologies for the different plants. And that might be a reason why some of those scientific names don't also come with a common name.
Okay. Now I got a Bahama passion flower is on the protected list. Is that the passion fruit vine I be eating all the time?
So no, there are two passion flowers. One is what you are normally eating. That's the fruit.
Yeah.
And then there's one that, like, if you go say like in the pine forest, you might see like this vine wrapped around a couple tree or something with this little tiny flower that look like passion, but it's always a bit smaller because it's more in like the drought condition, like less water and just, you know, a bit smaller, might be a little bit more stingy in the taste.
So I found somebody pointed out to me wild passion fruit. It's small, little orange ball, and it has a mesh. It's almost like it comes with its own mesh bonnet, right? Until it's ready. Is that the protected passion fruit flower?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'm gonna stop eating that right away, ma'am. And I'm gonna let everybody, because it's popped up and it's beautiful. It's yummy, right? It's an intense flavor. But I'm going to let the people in it because it's protected. But more importantly, I'm going to call Dr. Davis, because you out of country, to come and document it, you know, identify it and document it and store that information somewhere.
So the other thing is we're told about invasive species, right?
Yeah.
What are we know the casuarina, right? I'm aware that's an invasive species, so we shouldn't really be growing that. Are there any other trees that we should be aware of that we shouldn't be planting?
Yeah, so invasive species are basically what we identify as plants that aren't native and natural to an environment, but they also have a negative impact on the environment and the native plants or animals that should belong to that environment. So casuarina, for instance, when you see, like, you know, the blankets of just brown on the floor with all of the leaves, well, that has, like, the leaves have a bit of toxin in them that prevents our native plants from actually growing on the coastlines. In addition to casuarina, there's something called Hawaiian inkberry, which is the like bright green leafed plant that's usually on the beach, or Hawaiian sea grape for as well. It's something that's common, just popping up in different yards.
Hold on, but you know why, right? The imperial pigeon, the white pigeon with the black top and the black tip, that's the culprit. That bird is so smart. It plants that Brazilian holly, the pink peppercorn, and then it goes to, when you know, it plants it by sitting in a tree and pooping, and it moves around New Providence to all of its stock. They're doing a better job at food security than we do in Melissa. They plant, and then they migrate. They eat up all the food, and then they migrate because they have a growing schedule. They are the culprits.
So we have native animals, not just the white crown pigeon, but you have a various species of birds, even the native Bahamian iguana, other iguanas, other species. Once they eat berries off of a tree and then they take a poop, well, that's how we have, you know, different plants just kind of popping up in different areas. That's one way that happens.
Mm-hmm.
The Brazilian pepper, though, they just have so many berries on them that it's a you know, huge food source to the birds.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
I know I'm mad at them. I mean, I'm very mad at them, but I can't say nothing about it. So I've got a text here. It's really about pine trees, right? I know that people are very concerned about pine trees. I didn't invite you here to speak about any forest management plans. I just want to say, take this moment, though, to say to the texters and callers, because someone sort of referenced it, that you can get a burning permit. So if you're concerned about pine burning, tree burning, and coal making, you should absolutely download a copy of the Forestry Act 2010 and the Forestry Regulations 2014. Article 16, I think, is a burning permit, right? You have to get permits to remove tinder and non-timber or forest produce. And so there are some people who have been legitimately granted licenses and permits to harvest timber and to burn in on Crown land and in some reserves and protected areas. I just wanted to make that point. Now, the most in that same Forestry Regulations Act, Article 29, well, Part 7 is forest recreation. And Article 29 says that the Director of Forestry may, with regard to designated forest estate areas and in accordance with approved forest management plans, plan, develop, and manage recreation sites and facilities as he considers appropriate. And such facilities may include parks, roads and trails, camping grounds and sites, picnic sites, and such other facilities. You feel like maybe if we focus on making these spaces more accessible to the public, right, that we could grow awareness and appreciation for the importance of trees and tree planting?
I mean, I definitely think it's possible. I can't tell you the direct like distinction right now, but mm-hmm. there is a difference between like recreational use to like conservation use, like by the terminology in the legislation that you're reading from. I don't know if you can find that right now, but it's definitely something that people could take a reference to. Mm-hmm. Conservation forests are, you know, specific to being conserved over the years. And then these recreationally, you know, possibly used over the years, you know, boardwalks and just, yeah. I guess, you know, pallets and, you know, anything that can assist persons in understanding the benefits and the values of these ecosystems and the environments, putting them in the environments in safe ways without, you know, having them go off trail and possibly hurting themselves. Yes. It would be beneficial to the communities, not just in the pine trees, but also in the coccus forest, which is what we know as bush. Also, like, you know, within the mangrove areas, so yeah. like our national parks, for instance, Bonefish Pond National Park, which is out south, the Retreat Gardens, which is on Village Road, Primeval Forest, which is out like by Adelaide. These are all areas that already have controlled aspects to them for persons to enter and engage the local environments and learn more and just, you know, really get into that feel. So if we produce more of these, I definitely see the value and the benefit in that.
Absolutely. Melissa, I am all out of time. The last thing I'm going to say is Article 20 of this Forestry Regulations Act says that the Director of Forestry has a duty to develop and implement programs for the establishment of nurseries, the provision of seedlings and other planting material, the establishment of forest plantations, reforestations, and such facilities as he considers necessary for sustainable maintenance of trees and other forest crops. So that means I'm going to start a petition. I'm going to call the Director of Forestry and tell him, listen, I'm going to need like $1,070 to go buy some seeds and plant some trees. It's great to know that there's a policy that enables the government to support these initiatives. Melissa, I'm all out of time. I'm so sorry we got started so late in the show, but I'm glad that you're busy settling in Ireland, and I hope that you'll be available to join us to continue this conversation in the short term and not the long term.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Absolutely. Mr. Palmer, thank you so much this morning for walking with me.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. You guys have a great day. Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry is up next.